Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi there. Welcome to a final. Sorry, darling. That was a bit loud, was it? I'm here with my daughter sitting on my knee. You all right, Phoebe?
Yeah,
good girl. And this is the final Rich Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast of 2017. It's a little bonus one we weren't planning to do. And it's with John Robbins and Ahir Shah, who are both nominated for the Comedy Award, which you may know who the winner is by the time this comes out. The Fringe is pretty much over for me. I've got one gig to come and it's sold out. So that's nice, isn't it, Phoebe? Yeah? This nodding doesn't work on audio. The Leicester Square Theatre podcast will continue from next Wednesday. There's a noise upstairs. I think it's mummy. And have I hurt your earbuds by talking too loud? I'm sorry. We're recording some more Leicester Square Theatre podcasts in October, so do come along to those. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com. All your participation helps us make more. And I think we're about to launch a Kickstarter for this coming series. It'll be out in a few days. No, David, don't touch any. We're doing a Christmas Emergency Questions book for that. So if you've enjoyed the Emergency Questions books, then there will be another one on its way, hopefully, if the Kickstarter works. And you can, of course, buy an Emergency Questions book at gofasterstripe.com/EQ. Anyway, let's sit back and enjoy Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Sit back and enjoy it, Phoebe. I'm making you sit back and enjoy it. All right. See you later. I hope you enjoy this. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Newtown Theatre Grand Hall. Please ensure all mobile devices are switched off and note that no photography, filming or recording of any kind is permitted. In the unlikely event of a fire, please make your way calmly to the fire exits, which are clearly marked at either side of the auditorium, following the instructions of the Newtown Theatre staff. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy the show.
Can't believe we haven't got rid of him. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who is too exhausted by the Edinburgh Fringe to think of an amusing introduction or anything amusing on stage. I'll get that in now. It's Richard Herring!
Just smash the mic.
Sorry about that. Thank you very much. Oh, I'll be in such trouble now. I thought I was hitting something soft with that mic. Oh, dear. I won't be surprised if this doesn't get recorded. Welcome to Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast. I was hanging out with the amazing Bubble Man the other day. He's just so cool. He's such an awesome guy, very depressed about his life. He calls it Rehef, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. So welcome, this is a bonus podcast. I'm amazed anyone's here, thank you very much. I mean, this show was never publicised anyway, but this one wasn't even in the Fringe programme or anything. So well done for finding it, people here in the theatre, and thank you for coming along. It should be a good one. Let's see, yeah, hardly anything to talk to you about because I've just been asleep all week when I haven't been performing. My daughter every morning, she would say, what do you want for breakfast? And she says, ice lolly. That's what she says every morning. We say, you're never going to have ice lolly for breakfast. That's not something that happens. And she did it today, and she was really insistent today, and she started crying because she couldn't have an ice lolly. But we said, no, you could never have an ice lolly at breakfast. Then she got taken out by her mum, and I had an ice lolly for breakfast. So it's, I hope she never hears this podcast. Do what I say, not what I do. And it's the 20th anniversary of the death of Princess Diana. Yeah. I noticed in the news, that's my topical bit. She died at the end of the Edinburgh Fringe, 1997. So, I remember it very well. Weirdly, there was no Twitter at that time. So I didn't find out till about midday. But we all remember what we were doing, though, don't we? Especially the person driving the white Fiat. Hey, look, we're going to crack straight on. My first guest, I've gotten the wrong way around in my book, Tiff Stevenson was meant to be here today. Sorry if you came to see her, but she was doing the Leeds Festival today and somehow thought she was going to be able to double up. I love the optimism of comedians. That's what you have to love. She nearly did it, but it didn't quite work out. So our replacement guest is a fantastic replacement. He's best known as the worthy student in The Midnight Beast. That's why we're all here to see him, even though we didn't know he was on. It's our Hishar, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Come on in. Thanks so much.
Hello.
Sit down. Pull up a microphone and welcome to the show. We're mistreating all the microphones today. It's
Thank
good.
You. This is a very poignant day for me as a brown man who's also convinced that his white girlfriend's family are going to arrange to have him murdered.
Do you remember the death of Princess Diana? Or you must have been quite little.
I do. I would have been six.
Right.
But I remember my parents taking me into the living room and it was on the news and this was something that I was supposed to care about.
Right.
So I knew they were very sad.
Yeah.
We went to the park and put the stuffed toys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Around. And at the time, I was too young to plagiarise Stuart Lee's routine.
Yeah, it's good. I was just about to. So it's... Yeah, it was interesting. Weirdly, Stuart Lee's mum told us that Princess Diana died because it was the last night of the festival and we got drunk. And usually I'd turn on the TV in the morning. It's the days when there was an internet, but not really. And I didn't that day. And we were just getting ready to go home. And Stuart Lee's mum rang about 11:30 saying, have you heard the news? I went, no. Princess Diana's died. Oh. And it was interesting because I drove... it's a shame. I got on the train to come back to London and I was reading the Sunday Times. It was the previous, been printed the previous day before it had happened. It was all going about how Dodi was a bastard and Di was an idiot. And then by the time I got to London, the special editions had been printed that said how wonderful she was. So it was a wonderful journey down through. It was like an historic train journey that took me through time. And she got reassessed as a saint.
I believe it was Stalin who said that one death is a tragedy, but one particular one can be monetized for two decades.
Very good. Well, look, congratulations. You've been nominated for the Comedy Award.
Thank you.
How's that feel?
Because
I don't know. Is that what I'm saying?
It's very good, and anything that I say more than that to elaborate on my feelings will now seem like bullying. for a man who has been at the Fringe for more years than I have been alive.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I'm just going to keep coming back till they give it to me, and then that's how to make me stop. It doesn't seem to be working.
2 days ago, I was in Nando's insisting that you receive the panel prize. So if anyone on the panel was fond of fried chicken and pepe,
that could have done it.
Then that'll...
No, they
don't. It's not gonna happen.
They don't. I couldn't even win the Radio Times Comedy Champion, and that is voted for by internet nerds. So that if I can't win that, I can't win anything.
That's voted for by specifically your family.
It is. You're the favourite of all the comedy nominated shows I've seen. Your show is the only one I've seen. In fact, your show is nearly the only show I've seen. So congratulations.
Right, okay.
I saw you, I thought no one can top that. It's fantastic. So
I wish that the judges had felt the same way. Not bothered to go see the other.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you're up against, it's quite a big, you know, nearly everyone's been nominated, haven't they?
Yeah, all of the comedians. Which once again makes this all the more upsetting. Richard, there's a
but the show is about it's a quite political show. You're a quite political comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, quite. You are a political comedian, and there's a lot about Brexit in there.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. It's because obviously a lot of comedians are going to be tackling Brexit this year, I imagine.
I thought that basically everyone was going to have Brexit stuff and Trump stuff. Yeah. So the interesting thing, or the only possibility to make it interesting, was to try and take it in a direction that no one else would, short of the comedians who actually voted Leave and are talking about that.
Yeah.
But like, there's like three of them.
Someone must have voted Leave. I don't know who it was.
I can think of genuinely three. Yeah. And
can you? Was it any of you lot who voted Leave? Yeah, wait. Colin.
Cheers, man.
Colin.
Really good to know that my family and I entered into your thinking before.
You happy with yourself, Colin? First time in the fucking lifetime, if you are. So he sits in the front row and never smiles at a thing. Do you enjoy my show the other night, Colin? Yes, good. Thank you. Tell your face. there's loads of great stuff. I think we're a lot. You're tackling, obviously, as an Asian, a man of Asian origin, being in the England, especially at the moment, I think must be quite tricky.
I think it's just really working through that difference between the country that I thought I lived in and the one that it transpires I actually do.
Yeah.
And maybe having grown up in London and spent basically my whole life there, where everyone was from everywhere and everyone was just fine with that. And you realise that, even at starting to go around the country doing stand-up and stuff, that, oh, actually, that's not the case. And weird levels of hostility that I thought were like myths told to me by my grandparents are actually still very prevalent.
Yeah. So that's quite worrying and upsetting.
Oh, yeah, it's not like grey.
You managed to make it quite funny, though, within the show.
Oh, yeah, heaps of jokes about it.
Yeah. Like,
genuinely, some real corkers in there, but I'm very sad.
But it's interesting. It's interesting that a proportion of Leave voters assumed that Asian people would leave the country as well.
Exactly, and I am here to sorely disappoint them. I'm considering converting to Islam specifically to annoy them even more. And it would have the double whammy impact of annoying my dad.
So you're an atheist from a Hindu family, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite exciting.
Yeah, it's like I had to decide to not believe in so many gods. Improvise that. That's definitely going in something in the future. That was good.
It was very good. But I think it was also interesting. The show's interesting from the point of view of, you're about 25, are you?
26.
26. Well, that's about 25. I mean,
it rounds.
I think what's interesting about politics at the moment and the way things are going, it feels very much like this age divide between the elderly people who are voting to leave and the young people who don't have houses.
Yeah, basically. And I think it's just a very odd thing because, so 1997 was the New Labour government, and all of that sort of period between the ages of like 7 and 19, when you're vaguely conscious of what's going on, but you're not properly engaged. And so I've not really experienced what it's like to be both politically engaged and in any way hopeful. But like, I think presumably between 2008 and 2016, if I had been American, then I would have been able to. And so that was always like, oh, at least they're doing a nice thing, but now they've gone for the fascist instead, so okay.
Yeah. Well, everyone just lets you down. So like, 1997 was, apart from the sad death of Princess Diana, which hit us all,
hit is not choice. Yeah,
maybe the wrong choice word. It was, you know, there was, but then that's the disappointment because the new Labour government coming in was just genuinely. I remember walking around the streets of London that night,
everyone getting drunk and everyone talking. It wasn't like London at all. Everyone was smiling at each other and happy. And then, you know, obviously, as things panned out, it didn't work out all that well.
Yeah, but I mean, like, reality is always going to come into conflict with any sort of, like, baseless optimism. So, like, in exactly the same way that Obama was regarded as some messiah. It's like, no, obviously he's going to disappoint you in one or two ways. Yeah. But you can say, like, on balance, this dude was okay.
But what I'm saying is it's better to have no hope. Because then it's not dashed. I support York City in every in football, and every season I think, well, maybe this season they won't be relegated. They always are.
A lot of professional football happening in Cheddar.
there isn't any. I was born in Yorkshire, so that's...
Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
You know, you can live in a different place than your ancestors came from.
Truly, you and I are the two faces of multicultural Britain.
And I've refused to accept my Somerset roots and strongly support York City. And if it comes down to a fight between those two places, I will be going back to York to fight. don't think that's a very good metaphor. So, but
are you trying to reignite the War of the Roses?
I am, yeah. Well, the War of the Roses, except make it Somerset versus Yorkshire. Yeah. Lancashire has that tough enough as it is. Yeah, am I right? Yeah, it's still there. Whichever colour rose they were, fuck them. Yeah, that's how much I care about it. I think we're white roses, aren't we, in Yorkshire? Am I right?
White roses, Yorkshire. Yeah. And you can remember because of Game of Thrones. It's very Lannister and Stark are Lancaster and York, and red and white. It's
I don't remember what colour Lannister and Stark are, so that doesn't help my... Right, as a memory system, that doesn't help. That's just another thing that I don't remember. Do you remember how you don't remember? That's how you remember. But do you think young people are going to get... I mean, it feels like with the Corbyn things, but especially, that was young people getting behind him a little bit. I mean, I know you're slightly critical of him in this show, which I'm glad to see.
No, young people generationally getting really behind something does mean that we can lose slightly less badly than we expected to. And that's really been mind-blowing. didn't get trounced. Yes, Western World.
Do you think it will... Because it just feels to me... I did the Des Clark show Breaking the News the other day, and we had to complete... It's all quite an elderly audience, and... We had to complete like a saying something like 50% of people over 55 don't care about, and then we had to fill in the banks. Mm-hmm. And I said anything but themselves, and the audience didn't find it funny. But hopefully the people at home did. But it's especially those I mean, it's very much that baby boomer generation of the people who've had this kind of charmed life from the 60s all the way through. Everything's gone their way. And now they're sort of pulling up the ladder, yeah. And no one else can get up that ladder.
Yeah, but pulling up the ladder, setting fire to the ladder, destroying all ladder manuals, systematically underfunding every ladder factory in the country, retrospectively denying the existence of ladders, while claiming that in their day they were simply better at jumping.
I'd forgotten I was
always
setting you up.
Always got to work in the material.
I'd forgotten I was setting you up. It was almost like a Des O'Connor style setup to that, and I'd forgotten that you did that, but that was good. So and let's pretend you just made it up. It'll make us both look amazing.
The many gods thing I did make up, so be impressed nonetheless.
You can't keep going back. I made one up.
I made all of them up just earlier. How this works.
Yeah, so, I mean, they do a bit about how older people blame young people for buying coffee and that's why they don't own a house. That's the sort of... Are you genuinely hearing those arguments from people? I suppose there's the avocado stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, the avocados and coffees and stuff, as though we're supposed to make our houses out of the shells of them. But I don't know, it just seems very infuriating that it's a generation who received all of a certain level of benefits that were constructed in light of the post-war period. And it's like, right, we're going to change things, we're going to make them better, and you get all of that. What a lovely thing that we're going to do for you. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we had that. That was nice, but sucks to be you.
But will it just skip? Because they'll die, those people, eventually, and leave... You, I mean, I'm one of them, really. When I say they, I'm sort of in between those two generations. But then they'll give their houses to their grandkids. So is it just your generation's going to miss out, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm inheriting a shitload. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Well, I think part of what has frightened me recently is that we convince ourselves that all of these things are peculiarly generational and opinions will die out and stuff like that. But you see the photos of Charlottesville and everything. Those are dudes my age waving Nazi flags and stuff like that. It doesn't actually just go anywhere. And then you realize, well, actually, during the civil rights movement and stuff like that, when you see the pictures of the angry men spitting at black kids on their way to school, like desegregated schools for the first time, it's like, oh, that you're like 70 now. You're not old, and you're still going to be kicking around and voting for a good few general elections.
Yeah.
Although I assume that people who spit at black children in the street also make poor health choices in life, so would likely have a lower life expectancy. Particularly when they voted to take their own healthcare away from themselves.
That's true. Though, you know, Prince Philip's still alive, and he doesn't seem able to die, so racism maybe gives you some sort of life force.
Just if maybe you that's hate why you get more racist as you age, because you realise that spite is the only thing that's going to keep you alive.
I mean, but it all seems cyclical, and it does, you know, the Trump thing, you know, everyone was saying, oh, you can't say it's like Hitler, but it seems to me very much like the rise of Hitler I don't know.
Well, people, Hitler wasn't like Hitler until it was like Hitler.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, people thought Hitler was, you know, they treated him like a comic figure and they thought he was stupid.
Yeah.
Which is the same as now. And is Trump real? I mean, he is... Surely he really is stupid.
Well,
though.
Yes, I think that's the sole source of benefit in that this guy actually is as dumb as he comes across. One of the fantastic lines I read in a piece is that Trump is as dumb as liberals like to pretend George Bush was. which I think was a very, very neat way of encapsulating it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's like you realize that the problem with the establishment right in the United States was never any of his positions or anything like that. It's his crassness and his stupidity and his impulsiveness. And so you're like, oh, right, the ease with which you would all rally behind a well-mannered fascist is terrifying. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy's a fascist, but doesn't he hold the door open for ladies before they get... It's like, that's the only thing they're concerned about.
Yeah. You know, I kind of admire him because he was prepared to look into the face of the sun. That is, to me, that shows... strong leadership. He didn't go blind as far as we know, though he'd have to pretend he hadn't, wouldn't he, if he did.
He has the best vision, terrific vision, really.
That's just so astonishing. There's a great like meme of him looking at the sun and Pence touching that at NASA thing that says, please do not touch this. And go, these are the two most powerful men. Like these children going, ah, we're told not to look. I reckon you can look at eclipses, don't you? I reckon next one, let's all have a look. Let's see what happens.
Richard is actually prepping for his remake of Day of the Triffids.
It could be. And you talk about Brits not understanding, remember, and knowing much about their colonial history in the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was, you know, both intentional and unintentional elements of that throughout history in order to whitewash the reality of what happened. I mean, you have, you know, there's the subtle choices of what you choose to or choose not to include in textbooks, and then there's the very heavy thing of Operation Legacy throwing boxes of documents off the side of ships because they would be embarrassing to future generations to be like, oh, this is how specifically we did all the torture.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Totes happened.
So it's just, but all of history is that, isn't it? Is all of history people just subjugating other people?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, isn't it?
It is. Do you think it's a human trait, or do you think that we can rise above that and become better people?
Well, one would hope so. Yeah. I mean, but also we have expanded to a certain extent. So if you look at sort of prehistorical social constructions of like, well, you'd have a tribe of 100 people and everything, and now with the creation of the nation state in the 17th and 18th century, you have, oh, right, I suddenly care about 70 million people who I will never meet owing through an elaborate system of effectively indoctrination through education that ensures I pay my taxes and everything and support the Leviathan. You're like, well, that's worked on a national level. The United States was constructed, the entire American identity. You know, like,
yeah.
Why do you have the Apotheosis of Washington as the painting up there to deify these people? Because you need that myth that unites everything. I am very boring in real life. Like, what I do basically is that I start off with this sort of thing and over the course of a year work out how to mention dicks throughout the entire thing. And golly, it pays off. But the early stages, oof. My next show is literally about Nietzsche and the Soviet Union and Christ. It's not going to be funny. until, let's say, late July next year. I'll work out a way, but for now, don't come to early previews.
And are you going to be touring this current show?
Yes, so there's a two-week run in London at the end of September and beginning of October at the Soho Theatre, okay. And then Around and About.
And the show is called, I've forgotten what it's called because I just had your name on it. What's it called, the show?
It's called Ahir Shah Control.
Control, okay, it's good. Well, it's definitely very well worth seeing. There's a lovely metaphor about off milk, which we won't go into, but that's nice. We're not going to spoil it for them. It's very. I'll ask you some.
Hey.
Oh, good. I'm funny when I don't even know. That's the thing. I'll ask you an emergency question to get out of the embarrassment of having done such bad research. I mean, I've known for like 3 hours he was on the show. Yeah. I've seen his bloody show. That's better than any of the other cunts we've had on here. Yeah. Actually, I saw the Doug Anthony Allstars. They were good as well.
So good.
They were so good.
Invigoratingly good.
Yeah.
Incredible last year. If you haven't been to the Doug Anthony All-Stars, like go to them instead of me. I'm going to be full for the rest of the ride. You don't need to worry about that. Go see Doug Anthony All-Stars.
You've been full anyway, but you're doing the Free Fringe, aren't you? Which is, yeah. Have you found that?
Oh, it's so much better.
Yeah.
The only way to make money out of comedy in this town is to give it away.
So. And do you find people, because you do quite a good bucket speech at the end, but
good is sort of like just aggressive.
Okay,
and hostile.
But that's good. Like, it is a good thing.
It's I'm one step off. I think it's like effectively a mugging.
Well, you're confident about the show correctly, and you know it's good, and you say you pay 10, 15 pounds for this if you're doing another show. I don't think that's a fair argument because the people who are charging 10 to 15 pounds, like me, 14 pounds, doing that because we have to pay all the fucking expenses you don't have
yes,
to pay.
Yes, I know, but I don't want them to know that, you fool.
So that like, all that money's going to you.
You set it up at the high end, then you set up the lower end, they give you the lower end, and that's what you take.
Yeah, okay. I'm
good. Trying to mess with my hustle.
Yeah. Give him lots of money. I mean, no, you know, it's worth... But I think it's true, those, you know, unless the show is terrible, like giving £5 or £10, giving paper money seems the least you can do for going to see somebody's show. And it's nice if it goes to the act, really, and the landlords of Edinburgh, of course. You can't still get away from that. You need to have a bucket to live in. So you can all travel up in a massive bucket. Have you ever seen a ghost? Yeah, gone old school. Gone right for the beginning of the book. Look at that.
Don't think I've ever seen a ghost. I always used to feel that the bedroom in my grandparents' house was haunted whenever I went to visit them when I was a little boy, but I think that that was mainly because I was upset that I was leaving mum and dad, so I was like, oh no, this is scary for some reason, but then they just take good care of me.
Yeah.
It's fine. Quite like to see a ghost.
Yeah. Do you think if there are a ghost, they'll be in this building, definitely, this ghost. Because it's Masons, they've slaughtered a few. Pints in here, sort AA. Of virgin blood. I'd love to come. I bet it's the most boring. Have you ever been involved with the Masons? You can't say, can you? I bet it's just really boring. You know what the Masons? You're aware of the Masons?
I've never been involved.
Oh,
with
damn.
The no, I haven't. Is it a white people thing? I don't know. Like, it seems like the sort of thing that like dudes called Jeffrey do, who are like a million years old. I wouldn't get it. Oh, yes, you do have to believe in God. That's right, Colin, yes.
Do you believe in God, Colin? No, that's why you couldn't
You and me
Masons.
Are going to start another club.
Colin, are you God? No. And I very nearly got... When I knew the guest had dropped out, I nearly thought I might just have to interview Colin. And we're sort of slow... Over the years, we're very slowly... We're finding out a little bit about you day by day. Each one of these... You're more than welcome here, Colin. I just want you to know that. What do you think is the sexiest puppet? If you had to have sex with a puppet, which puppet would you have sex with? Have you not thought? It's almost like you've not thought about it at great length. Too busy thinking about politics to think about which puppet you'd like to have sex with.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say I'd go with the emu just to keep
emu.
In the tradition of British comedy.
How would you have sex with the emu? Would you have sex in its mouth or up its rod hole?
I would have sex with the emu. I would fuck the emu troublingly.
Would you? But that's got to be a gape at the back. That's a gaping orifice. it's been fisted to the point that there's no spring left in that. So you would have to. you'd have to come in from the front, and then that is just a... It's a dead end, that way.
Life finds a way.
Emu. Never thought... You know, he's pretty, like, he's available and unprotected now. You just have to find the cupboard he's in. I think someone tried to take on Emu. Someone did that, right? Did someone try to do Emu after Rodol?
What, do?
I mean, do, like, the do it.
Right, okay.
I mean, the whole thing was very suspect, wasn't it? So it's... What he did with that emu, thank God he fell off that roof. That's all I can say about Rod. Thank God for his legacy. Have you ever played the game Yahtzee?
Yeah.
What's your highest score in Yahtzee?
I don't remember. Because it was like wasn't it like with, you know, on early computers, like you'd have solitaire and stuff, you'd have Yahtzee. And...
Yeah, you would. And it's dice as well. And they're very early computers of dice you would throw. Mine's 715, so.
Mine's 716.
Pretty good. Yeah. It is
that
is
good?
It is.
Is it one of those games where you want to score less?
Here's an emergency question for you. What does mansplaining mean?
I'm not sure, Richard. Maybe you could tell the women in here.
All right. I've got confused because we started a little bit early, didn't we? So I've got a bit more time than I thought. Going to ask another emergency question. If you had to give cunnilingus to a fish... A lot of these I'm not expecting, I have to say. If you had to, which fish would you lick out? And that is licking out the back end, obviously. Whatever that... is it cloaca in a fish? It probably isn't. Yeah. Yeah, very knowledgeably, yeah.
I'd like a piranha. I live dangerously.
Okay. Yeah. You're at the other end, it's fine. As long as you can... I don't know how... Don't do it. I chose a mermaid.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, but it's still a fish, isn't it? So it's still the wrong end, isn't it? I should choose what would you call the one the other way around? One that's the top half a fish and the bottom half a woman. That is what I would lick off. If I'd lick out a fish that had a woman's legs and
the
vagina.
The mermaid might reciprocate and then that would be nice.
Yeah.
But if the top half fish, bottom half woman reciprocated, that would be horrifying.
I imagine there'd be some suction on a giant fish with a human's legs. That mouth would be... I haven't thought about it before, but that would definitely...
That's not what your sketchbook implies.
So you're going to tour the country? You're just doing the Soho Theatre with your new show? You've got to have put a tour in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a few other places.
And is there anything coming up on the TV for you?
No one ever asks me. Maybe they'll ask
They will now, because you've been Perrier nominated. Do you still call it the Perrier, even though it's not the Perrier anymore? Because you probably don't even remember it when it was the Perrier.
Yeah, well, that's what... Because it was that for so long, wasn't it? And then it was like, IFCOM...
Yeah.
Ben Foster's.
It's great for Perrier because they realised we don't need to give the money.
Yeah. we'll still get the
publicity. So actually, before you go, tell us about being the worthy student in the Midnight Beast. What was that?
Oh, that was really good. I had two lines, one of them was, "You're not the NHS."
Good. Did you deliver it like that?
It was,
Yeah, good.
Except with a lot more gravitas. Yeah. The day I had longer hair as well.
Okay.
So that was, if you want to imagine the scene, I'm really setting a scene here. It was me apparently going up to a blood donation thing on the street where they held me down in the chair and just got a big, big knife. And I don't think that anyone would ever have fallen for that scheme. If someone in the street was saying that they were running a blood donation clinic, but it was just them and a sequence of rusty knives, I don't think anyone who had succeeded educationally enough to get into a tertiary institution would have fallen for that scam.
But you still did the part.
Oh, I accepted the money.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a fun thing. Yeah.
Good. Well, we're going to have to let you go, but thanks so much for stepping in and rushing over here.
That's all right. Thank
from
you
your show.
Me.
Do go and see Ahir Shah. Ladies and gentlemen, Ahir Shah. It's a fantastic show. Very fantastic. Thank you very much, Frank. I really appreciate it. Can keep your applause going for a man who is best known from his appearance on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Deal or No Deal. That's what he's best known for. It's John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen. John Robbins. Hopefully, he went for a coffee. He might have gone home. Here he is. There he is. Welcome.
How you doing?
Sit down.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, man.
And congratulations to you as well for being one of the 100 comedians nominated for... the only good thing about having both of you on is that I know one of you is going to lose at least. That is my only... That's, unless you could both win it.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As a joint winners, yeah.
A double, yeah. They can kind of do anything.
They can do anything they want.
They could give it to no one.
They could still give it to me. They could still go, we thought about it, and it was Richard Herring, actually. That would be awesome if they did that.
Isn't that one of the eligibility things, though, if you regularly put on plays about Rasputin in rooms of over 1,000 seats, yes. You're actually ineligible for the prize?
Yes, I think it is. It's a very confusing eligibility, I have to say. They should simplify it. Because if you've had your own TV show, however long ago it was, and if you regularly play over 500 people, but then that rule is very hard to enforce, isn't it? Because
yeah, I mean, I think it's all just sort of a guideline, and I would imagine you sort of get a picture in your head of the sort of person who doesn't need the award anymore.
Yeah. Well, don't know how I've managed to slip into that category. So the show is it's about a breakup of with a long-term partner, mm-hmm. Male or female. I don't know if you're straight or gay.
I don't see gender.
You know,
I'm not even sure.
No, I'm not sure. Was it all the other person's a comedian as well that you're in a relationship with? And was it all just a scam where you went together in order that you could both get a show out about the breakup?
Playing the very long game. Playing the sad game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's been like being married to Tom Cruise, isn't it? It's a similar, similar
it's
thing.
It's exactly the same. Yeah.
And if it is, would you like to go in a relationship with me and then next year we could just break up just for Edinburgh and we could both do a
Yeah, we'd have to. We'd probably have to plan in advance how it would go to then structure it in terms of a show about it.
Yeah.
But I think, we could do that.
Yeah.
Where would your wife and child figure in this? Because, I mean, I'm free to say yes to that.
Okay.
I'm very much a master of my own.
I think you're allowed to have, even if you're married, you're allowed to have a relationship with someone of the same sex, I think, isn't it?
I'm sure that's offensive, but I'm not sure who to.
I don't remember vowing anything about that. I said, I've forsaken all chicks, I think is what I said in the marriage vow. I'm keeping my options open.
I would love to see a Richard Herring sort of in-depth analysis of the wedding vows, like finding loopholes in everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Till death do us, but what if it's not death? What if it's what if she's on a life support machine with their face made of ham? What if her face... If she doesn't die, yeah. but her face is made of ham and her armpit secretes suntan lotion, then can I cheat on her with a Shrek? That would be very funny.
It would. But you haven't got together with your ex-partner to make sure that people could go and see both of the shows on the same night. You should go to one of them and then go to the other.
You what?
You haven't. You're on at the same time as the person.
Yeah, we're not touring it.
It'd be nice to be able to go to both. In the same night, get both sides of the story. And then there could be like a vote at the end. Whose fault was it?
Like those buttons you press on the way out of the airport to see if you were happy with the standard. And you just see kids pressing them like that, so you realise that they're completely futile as a system of getting feedback for how airport security was. No, it's been unfortunately pitched by people other than us as a kind of two sides of a thing, but it's not at all.
No.
My show is a show about me, and her show is a show about her, and that's exactly how what they are. Regardless of what you read in the gutter press.
But it's sort of interesting, isn't it, to put your... I mean, that's what all comedians do. Like, not all, but a lot of comedians will put their private life up there and their soul-searching. So it's obvious... So it was a big relationship for both of you, and it's, you know, you're obviously going to both want to talk about it, especially, I suppose.
No, but I don't think... I mean, the shows aren't about that. No. They're not about the relationship, they're about us. And I think a lot of comedians, sort of certainly of our sort of year group, your show is your experiences over the last year.
Yeah.
That's what you got to work with, unless you're really talented and can come up with stuff that hasn't happened to you.
Yeah.
But so that's what you sort of got, so you have to sort of frame it in as classy a way as possible, and there are sort of several more tawdry routes that were open and were denied, were avoided.
Yeah.
However, that's not been how some people have reported on it.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. But two comedians together, that's never going to work, though, is it, right? Two.
Yeah, one of them would have to change jobs, surely, for it to work.
Oh, dear. I was saying to you backstage, if you get married, you just have to stick with it.
Well, not according to some of your caveats to the vows.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I mean, the suggestion of the show was we wouldn't really be having a relationship, but we'd just pretend we'd suck each other off a bit.
A bit.
Just so we knew what that was like, in case anyone quizzed us about it.
Yeah. Where would this quiz take place? In a dramatic change to pointless. It's Alexander Armstrong and Richard Osman asking John Robbins and Richard Herring what it's like to suck each other off a bit. A bit. Not a lot.
Oh, dear. I think in the past you used to... Did you do a routine about wishing you were single again because you'd missed out on... Tinder and all that sort of thing? Was that you, or have I messed up with it?
That's definitely a bit Stuart Goldsmith.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It would not be the first time we've been mistaken. I was once doing a gig in London, and Phil Nichol came up to me and said, "Hey, thank you so much for having me on your podcast." And I didn't make. We don't have guests on us. We do it ourselves.
You're very similar, although you've never lived in the house behind mine, and Stuart Goldsmith has, so I should know the difference between you. And Nish Kumar as well.
Do they really?
Well, they used to. Well, and I've moved now as well. We've all moved. I think Nish is still there in the same... Our houses backed onto each other in Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So, sorry about that. But have you been on Tinder since you've broken up with your girlfriend?
No, I've never used... I've never used a dating app or anything like that, but someone told me, did you know there's a Tinder for, like... celebs.
Is there?
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying I'm a celeb, but it's for sort of people in the media.
Yeah.
So, like, unbearable people. and also, if you've got, like, it's based on your Instagram followers. So if you're sort of big on Instagram, you can go on this. So there's quite a few celebs on there.
Right.
And another comedian told me about it who was on it. And I tried to download it, and you have to be invited. And they wouldn't let me on it. It's called Raya.
Okay.
And Matthew Perry's on it. And Sharon Stone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Imagine that. Imagine going on a date with Sharon Stone when she's visiting London.
Yeah. But like Tinder, oh no, I don't really know what Tinder is because I've been married for 10 years or in a relationship for 10 years. Damn it.
It's a dating app.
It makes it so much easier.
It's a dating app that debases us all.
Yeah, that's what I liked. But, you know, I wish it had been there when I was 35. That's what I'm saying. But like, sure, it's about people who are in your proximity. They can't be met, you know, you're just in the Groucho Club. You'd see them anyway, wouldn't you? They all hang out in the same place, media people.
To an extent, I guess it's difficult kind of to know where to meet people, really. Because what people know me from is a podcast. So they've had like, anyone that knows you has probably been listening to you for 3 years.
Yeah.
And you've never met them. And they come up to you with like, oh my God, how's this thing worked out? And you're like, I can't remember ever mentioning that. And they're like, but I was listening to it today. So you kind of, they bring so much to that that you can't then go, oh, we'll start to go out with each other with you, have this idea of, you've known me for 3 years.
Yeah.
Whereas, or it's people in the industry, which I would say is a poison chalice.
Okay. You might get over that feeling eventually. I sort of think, you know, it's ultimately, it's about finding, you know, it's good if someone understands the job. But I think, like, I think it is difficult to be in a, you know, some of the comedian relationships do work out, but a lot of them don't. And I think it's difficult because
I wonder if the stats are any different to, because don't half of all marriages end in divorce?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if the stats are any different. They're probably not.
They're probably not.
Actually.
But comedians are all pricks, right? So it's a good thing to avoid from both levels.
I don't think they are. I think comedians are mainly lovely.
Okay. Yeah. That's where you're going wrong. That belief. When you have some self-understanding, like me, you'll know that you are like I am a prick. I'm only joking. No, I won't ask that. Oh, dear, my goodness. Are you ever mistaken for John Robbins, the prophet born in 1500... who was a ranter and Puritan prophet?
I've got his book.
Have you?
His
yeah,
rants. Because I was Googling my own name.
Yeah.
A long time ago, probably one of my first Google searches, and he's a notorious ranter. Thought he was God. And so I ordered his pamphlet on Amazon. So he's sold one book in 400 years, and it's mine.
Yeah.
Absolute nutter. But
did he have any good rants in there?
Sort of a lot about sort of wheat, you know, the issues of the day, tithes.
I read about him on Wikipedia briefly, and he had to recant his belief. He was imprisoned, and then he had to go to Oliver Cromwell and recant that his prophecies were untrue, and then he was let out again. And he lived to 50-odd, which is, in those days was a long time.
Have you been... Did you research him accidentally?
I mainly researched him.
Robbins were doing a show about being God.
I looked you up, and then I thought, actually, him and the other John Robbins. You know the other John Robbins?
The diet guy.
Yeah, the diet.
He's a double B, though.
He is a double B.
Yeah, but we don't talk about
him. Okay.
The double Bs that curse posters on gigs across... Sometimes no H double B.
Right.
The double insult.
Yes, yeah. Well, but every time I write your name, I have to double check it. So it's true. You feel like a JON, John.
No,
you
don't
do.
Say
I
that.
Just absolutely.
I hate those dicks.
Yeah, you're one of them.
I'm an H. I'm old school. King, the Baptist, the disciple Jesus loved,
yeah.
Barnes, King again.
Yeah. Are there any famous JON Johns?
Richardson. That's it.
That's it, okay. And Robbins, I always have to check as well. He was the son, John Robbins, with double B, was the son of Baskin Robbins, the ice cream manufacturer, and now is against the whole dairy industry.
Yes, he's sort of a vegan diet champion, isn't
yeah.
he? Health guy.
How do you think that plays out in the Robbins with the double B household?
Well, didn't Robbins with the double B dad die?
Yeah, I think he did.
Of ice cream.
Yeah, he eating too much ice cream.
Like the guy from Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
When will they learn?
Yeah. I don't even own an ice cream company and I'm in danger of dying from that as well. If I owned an ice cream company, I'd be in a lot of trouble. I find it very difficult to, if there's any, especially like at stressful times like now, there's my, we've been putting chocolate in the fridge and then there's just no chocolate in the fridge quite quickly.
My problem this festival has been cheese.
Oh, is it?
And I went to get some breakfast the other day and I had to be quite quick and I realised all I had was three types of cheese, not even anything to put that cheese on. So I sort of just had a mouthful of Saint-Agur and a mini baby bell and then left the house. You know, I didn't even have bread.
Did you not feel like you could pop out and get some bread?
I didn't have time. I was like, I'll just grab a banana and a smoothie from the fridge. And like, oh, no, just three types of cheese.
Then you ate all three. Didn't say, I'll settle on one type.
No,
I'm going to eat all three.
But I live with, up in Edinburgh, I live with George Egg, who's doing a cooking show, and he's a fantastic chef.
Yes, he is.
And he cooks a lot of lovely stuff in the house.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is very nice.
Does he cook on household appliances when you're in the flat, or does he leave that in the workplace?
Well, there he would do, but they're all sort of at his venue, so he doesn't get a chance. But he's got a Victorian sandwich maker, which is basically like a cast iron, sort of, it looks like a sort of a bellows, but you clamp it down and you put it on the flame and we eat circular toasted sandwiches and talk about our feelings.
And do you think George Egg is worried that you're trying to start a relationship with him so that you can do a show about him?
And we got really emotional one night and just started playing each other sad songs. And we were sat at the kitchen table, we both looked up, we got tears in our eyes, and George said, I love our friendship, John, it's so real. Oh, I absolutely love him.
And then did he say, should we just suck each other off just so we can
just
say...
in case anyone asks us what it's like.
Just so we can say, in case anyone asks. That's what I would do. No, Edinburgh is such a weird place. So I've been here a lot of times. And like, I think I've kind of got over it. Like, having come here, this is my 24th time I've come here or whatever. But it's difficult when you've got associations with all these different places and people
So I had last year was my first year off.
Yeah.
And my first year off doing a solo show. And I came back and I felt like I was returning to uni just a year too late. So when it was becoming a bit, what's he still doing here? Yeah. But, and because you just sort of, I go to like a bar now and I'll sort of say, I'll see who's in the bar. Yeah, I'll know loads of people in the bar. And it's not that I don't know people. So I don't recognize, it's not even people I've seen around.
No.
So you sort of, then sort of you crumple in stature and sort of back out of the bar. But then you have every smell and sight and sound you have these intense associations with. So it's like walking through the corridors of your past, walking through all your sort of failures. And then like that smell of the malt from the brewery hits you and suddenly it's like 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Do you remember Princess Diana dying in 1997?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. What were you up to?
Keeping a low profile, laying low. No, I was. My mum woke me up. I was in bed.
Oh,
she said, "Princess Lady Diana."
You're in bed
died.
With your mum.
No, I was in bed, and my mum woke me up. I was in a bed in my house, which is absolutely fine. Tawdry mind. Yeah, that's where I was.
Okay. Were you sad about Princess Diana when she died?
Yes.
Yeah, are you still sad now? Do you think it's good that
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I like the fact that sort of the Daily Mail and the Express, every so often we'll do an interview with Harry or Prince Williams and manage to get it back on the front page again.
Yeah. And they seem to say different things. So they did one where we were forced to do that walk and we didn't like it. And then this week is, oh, no, I'm glad we did the walk. It was good.
But if you're a journalist and you ask the same person the same question 1,000 times, eventually their story will start to fall apart because they'll be tired or annoyed. Or being a prince, which is probably quite hard,
probably
I would imagine.
It probably is. Yeah, I very much find, like, with that going into the bars, I went to Brooks Bar, which, like, 10 years ago, that was where people I knew hung out. And it was, like, really weird to go in there 10 years on. Because you sort of still feel like it is that was yesterday, that 10 years ago. And it's just like, oh, those people don't come to Edinburgh anymore are dead.
My best friend got through to the final of So You Think You're Funny last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I did that competition 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I watched his semi-final in the room I did my final, and in my head, it was 6,000-seater, right. Like cavernous, huge space with just an endless blackness leaving off the stage. And then you get in there and you think, oh, a bit pokey, this tiny little room. I can see all the sides of it all at the same time, but at the time. And then went to the party and it was mad. And I saw Julia Chamberlain, who books it, and I said, it was 12 years ago, Julia. And then we both sort of mock shot ourselves in the head and had a lovely laugh.
Imagine what it's like. You're really young. Imagine what it's like being me. That's awful. Just imagine it.
Yeah, I'll be you one day.
You will.
God.
I'll be dead by that.
You'll be dead by then as well.
I'll be dead of ice cream.
You're in your 40s, aren't you?
I'm not. I'm 50. I'm doing a show called Oh Frig, I'm 50. I know you're, you know, a bit self-obsessed this year, but it's...
at least I came up with a new show title.
Frig is a very different word than 5. And 50 is a different number than 40. Good, I'll ask some emergency questions. I'm confused by this new time. It's confused me. Well, usually this is a different time. This is a special extra one we've added in. And they couldn't give me the same time. So I'm going to dip into the emergency questions. It's available from gofasterstripe.com. Have you ever killed a mouse? I mean, you wouldn't now. You're a pescatarian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you kill a fish.
And take great pleasure in it. but I saw a vole last night.
Yeah, a vole.
Yeah, runny vole. It was a running, so I call it a runny vole.
Right. And did you kill it?
No, we chatted briefly. Yeah. One of those awkward things in Edinburgh where you see a vole you kind of know, and how's the show going? Oh yeah, and then you don't really want to be chatting, and then you take a flyer.
Yeah.
You go home.
I once witnessed a mouse being killed by a child.
Oh, wow.
I was also a child. But it was a kind of frozen fight, and then the kid stamped on it.
It was frozen?
Well, it was frozen in fright, because it was been cornered, and then the kid stamped on it. It stuck with me.
Oh, it would do?
Yeah,
it's going to stick
nasty.
With me?
I've never eaten a mouse
stamping
since
on
that
a mouse.
Day.
Since that day?
Oh, actually, once I more or less killed a mouse.
Did you?
That might be why I put this question in the book. When I was vegetarian... We had mice in our flat, and I was quite scared of them, and my flatmate was away. And then there was a mouse running across the kitchen counters, and I managed to... It ran, and it went under the spice rack, so I put a board up against the spice rack to trap it, and then I didn't really know what to do. I think I threw cumin in its eyes. and then I left it there, and my flatmate was away all weekend. So I just left a mouse to... It didn't die yet.
You're just sneezing
it
a lot.
It sort of became emaciated, and then my flatmate took it out and let it go outside. I was too scared to, so I've effectively killed a mouse.
Well, you gave a mouse a very stressful episode of its life.
Of a weekend, like that, in mouse.
You kidnapped a mouse.
In mouse years, that is a long time, a weekend for a mouse.
Yes.
With nothing to eat but some cumin you have to lick off your own eyeballs.
Wonder how long you could survive on spices alone.
I don't know how long you survive, but wow.
How much?
What a wonderful time you would have.
What nutrition would you get if you could have, like, paprika, cumin, maybe Tabasco? Are we allowing that?
If only we had the other John Robbins on the podcast. He might be able to tell us.
He would tell us. Turmeric, you probably live forever.
Yeah.
If what you read in the magazines is true.
I reckon, if you're going to eat basil and stuff, that's got to have nutritional value.
Yeah, if it was fresh basil.
The herbs.
Suck a bay leaf for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Reduce yourself.
Could keep you going for a while. What do you think, Colin? No.
Good.
That's the problem with Colin as a guest. He just shuts down the fanciful.
Right.
You and I.
You've got a yes and, Colin.
You've got a yes and.
Yes and. Yes and. It's an improv. You what?
Where's my yellow jacket?
Now he's kicking off.
Where's your yellow jacket? Where's your fucking yellow jacket, John?
It's in my bedroom.
That we've come to expect you wearing all the time.
It's in my bedroom, yeah.
Bedroom at home or your bedroom here?
No, my bedroom
You're using
here.
It in the show.
No, well, I did for the... So it's a Freddie Mercury leather yellow jacket, bespoke made.
Yeah.
Really nice. And the plan was, because we had a nice photo of me in it for the poster, and there's a... And I'm a big fan of Queen. I wear it on stage when I come out, and then it's a sort of a punchline to a joke made about 8 minutes into the show. Right. But after the first two shows up here, it sort of became quite clear that A, half of all your audiences have never seen you before, or don't know you, don't know that you like Queen, and they'll just sit there thinking, why is that man wearing a Freddie Mercury jacket on? He's not made any reference to it. Is he trying to sort of, trying to reclaim it as just a fashion item and not a reference? So I just had to stop doing it. And also people were coming thinking the show was about Queen. Yeah. It's just there's sort of one Queen joke in there, which the jacket was little more than an embellishment for, so I just got rid of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's in his bedroom.
Colin. Okay.
There's a company that specialise in remaking very sort of iconic leather jackets, if you're interested in one, Colin. No, shaking his head, not interested at all. He wants to know his whereabouts, but he doesn't want one for himself, and that's fine. You what? You like seeing it on me? Oh, thank you very much,
hey,
mate. I like
hey,
wearing it. I feel
John.
It. Yep.
This could be... this
oh,
could,
God.
Do you listen to John's podcasts? Yeah, so as long as you don't listen to his podcast and know everything about him, this could be a relationship. I mean, it's an odd thing that it started this way with you being such a big star of this show and John just being a regular guy. But I reckon he could...
I love that you came to see the tour show in the Stand, having not ever heard the show. You download it, you not listen to it, right? But that show must have been incredibly baffling in places.
John, that's what Colin likes. Colin likes to sit in the front row. I'm amazed you haven't seen him. He sits in the front row and then just looks bored and annoyed.
But he keeps coming. The fact that you would put yourself through that again and again, just being baffled.
He's smiling.
By stuff.
This is a very unusual. I'm a bit worried about him. He's chuckling.
Bit of a spark.
Colin's actually chuckling and looking bashful and shy. It would be nice if this was the moment that, you know...
Colin came out of his skin.
Yeah, and you two...
You
found love, and then, you know, 4 years down the line, you could do shows about Split. Colin could just come and go, yeah, how'd it go? You want to talk about it, Colin? No. And then you could do another hour about me and Colin. And
it's
the
not
jacket.
About Colin.
Okay. Oh, dear. Well, they flashed a light at me. I thought this show started at 3:40, but maybe it didn't.
It did.
Well, yeah, okay. Maybe that was just a warning of...
Oh, we got 8 minutes.
They were getting bored. Yeah. Well, it started a bit before 3:40, so, you know, no one's given me any hints from the back, so we'll just keep going until they... No, we'll stop in a sec. What do you think the Adam Sandler film The Cobbler could ever happen in real life?
I don't know the film, but
I don't care. Do you still think it could?
So it's about a guy who makes shoes.
Yeah, cobbler.
And with hilarious consequences.
Yes.
Falls in love with a local lady.
Probably there is that in there. It's not the notable thing. The notable thing about the film is that his father owned an enchanted cobbling machine. And that any shoes repaired on that machine, it's not even made, will then, if you then put them on, you will become the person who had those shoes. Or your physical appearance will become them. So you can go out and be, you know...
Do you think he reads the scripts he gets? Because Punch Drunk Love is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is a serious, hefty bit of work.
Yeah.
And then it sort of become this.
That's why I am fascinated by him for that very reason.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing about artistic decisions and financial decisions and making that choice a bit about which way you go in your life.
But then a lot of actors, when they're sort of interviewed about this, say people assume you have total choice of what you do, and actually all you get is what you're offered.
Yeah.
So
you can turn the cobbler down.
You could turn down The Cobbler, but then, you know...
I have a feeling that one of his films, it might be The Cobbler...
Imagine what he's turned down. I'd love to see the scripts that Adam Sandler went, no.
Maybe he just doesn't realise you can turn
the
it down.
The key cutter.
It's coming. Oh, shit, I can't believe I've got to do this for this film.
That's actually a better idea.
The key cutter,
cutter with an enchanted key-cutting machine that gives you the key to any house in history.
Well, that is just... Oh, okay.
Or the key to any house.
Yeah.
The key to any house.
That's a bit, it's worrying that it's sort of...
Yeah, but that'd be an interesting thing about voyeurism.
Yeah, and, you know, stealing things.
Yeah, but that'd be
dark. Attacking people in the house.
I'm not saying it's a comedy. Maybe that could be how Sandler sort of rejigs his career, is by sort of making dark versions of all the terrible films he's made.
Yeah. I think it's more likely a key cutting machine would be enchanted than a, yeah. a cobbler machine.
Because keys are more magical than
they
shoes.
Are. And, you know, I mean, is there even a cobbling machine, really?
You'd have to ask someone at Timpson's.
But there is definitely a key cut thing. And, you know, there's that thing with a key that you put the actual key in, don't you? And then it simultaneously follows. So there's a, that could be a magical transformation as the key passes its magic to the new key as you're cutting it.
Yeah.
Whereas with a cobbler, that's just crazy, the idea of that being magic involved in that. It's
what was
the
film
shoe, isn't it?
Where, who's the super famous actor who's retired and won loads of Oscars?
It is Charlie Chaplin. Let me guess. I've got enough. It is Cary Grant.
No, current, very recent. Drink your milkshake. I drink it up. That guy. Brian Blessed. Didn't he do a film where he's so method that he went to train as a cobbler for 6 months? Maybe he came out of the film just in pre-production. They had to get Sandler in last minute.
Yeah, maybe.
Does anyone know that story about him training to be a cobbler for 6 months? What was that film? Was that for? It was what? No, not My Left Foot, but good. what was it? Just did it. What for? He's not a method actor. He's having a nervous breakdown.
If he was doing the cobbler, he would have to for 6 months be someone who owned a magic cobbler machine, and then become. I mean, he'd be good at becoming other people because that's sort of what he does. Maybe Daniel Day-Lewis, his whole life.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Maybe his whole life was method acting for being in the cobbler. He said, "I've got to pretend to be loads of different people. I don't really want to be an actor. I just want to do the cobbler." And so I'll have to pretend to be lots of people in lots of different films. And then when I've done that enough, I will have the experience to be in the cobbler. And then he did it all and they went, "We don't want you, we want Adam Sandler." That's why he's retired from acting.
Yes.
I should have got it from that because he's retired from acting. That's why that was the clue. But, you know, all actors retire from acting eventually, one way or the other.
Or they are retired by the Lord.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
The ultimate director.
It is. Oh, well, look, it's been lovely to see you. Thanks very much for coming on again. We had a lot of fun at the Leicester Square Theatre and here as well. And very good luck. If out of the two of you, I hope you beat Ahisha.
Hey,
I hope you do.
I feel very strongly this year. It's that I don't think anyone should feel they've been beaten in a creative enterprise.
I think it very much is. At the moment, you nine are all the winners at the moment, and to a lesser extent, the new acts also are winners. And everyone else who's here, the other 1,000 people have all lost.
Have you ever seen, and it was played a major part in sort of changing my attitude towards, because I used to really beat myself up about it, but have you seen Dustin Hoffman's Oscar speech for Kramer versus Kramer?
I haven't.
If I describe it to you, I will get emotional because it means so much to me.
I'd like that to be a beautiful end to this mini-series if you start crying.
But for anyone who has ever felt that they have sort of failed when they've been trying to do something creative, it is the most incredible bit of sort of motivational chat he does when he accepts the Oscar. Okay. And I find it very affecting, and I would recommend anyone check it out.
Shall I put the link to it in my
that would be amazing.
And then people could watch this straight away after.
Yeah,
and it'll be an emotional end to what's been an amazing Fringe for in so many ways. For us all.
Could I plug my tour?
Yes, please do. I didn't mean to ask you. Yes, sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
So I'm touring this show next year from January to April. I'm doing gigs in London at the Leicester Square Theatre.
Yes.
And over the country, and I hope people come.
Do go and see him. Also, come and see me on tour at the same time as all the other comedians are on tour. But me first, and then you can choose which ones you like out of the others. Come and see us all. Comedy, in a way, if just come to any comedian, we all win, right? They're definitely telling us to go now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's John Robbins. Thank you very much. Cheers, man. Thanks so much for coming in. Thank you, everyone, for coming along. It means so much and really helps us. Thank you, everyone at home. We're doing more Leicester Square Theatre. Well, they're still going out. We're doing more in October. I'll be down there after the show. You can buy an emergency questions and other stuff down there. We're doing a collection for Scope as you go out. If you would like to give some money to Scope, please feel free. Thanks so much for coming, and I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Oh. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.